Welcome to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel, and I'm joined by MNN's Bill Werner, Brent Palm, and Mike Grimm. We're going to delve into what's happening in the North Star State. If it matters in Minnesota, we've got it covered. This week, lawmakers approved funding to expand housing opportunities across the state. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. But first,
the motion prevails. The Senate is now adjourned.
The Minnesota legislature ended its 2023 session on Monday, 2 hours before the deadline, with no screaming and shouting or parliamentary missiles fired back and forth between the House and Senate in the closing seconds. So, Bill, how did things manage to turn out like this after years of frequent stalemate and gridlock, special sessions, and even government shutdown?
Tasha, the switch from divided government to Democrats' trifecta after the last election probably has the most to do with it. But as they say, the devil is in the details. The route to the most cordial and orderly end of session in years was probably sealed the weekend before the final gavel, in other words, last weekend, when Republicans and Democrats finally got a deal on a bonding package for state public works projects. That had been in limbo since mid-March, Senate Republicans refusing to provide the necessary votes unless Democrats increased the amount of tax relief to Minnesotans. What might have helped break things free was an exchange during Senate floor debate on the massive Health and Human Services budget, when Republicans accused Democrats of shortchanging Minnesota's struggling nursing homes.
We didn't realize the governor, really, this is not a deal to him. It just didn't matter.
Anoka Senator Jim Abler.
They're funding all types of wants and needs in their bills that have come through here, and yet here we have an actual need of our most vulnerable that need 24/7 coverage.
Glencoe Senator Glenn Grunhagen. Senate Minority Leader Mark Johnson said Republicans knew Democrats would not agree to the tax cuts they were demanding, including totally eliminating state income tax on Social Security benefits. So he says Republicans refocused to another important issue, nursing homes, on which Johnson says Democrats would find it difficult to defend their position.
We dropped a lot of our tax and surplus demands and said, can we at least fix nursing homes?
And here was the deal. Senate Republicans provide needed votes to pass a $1.5 billion bonding or borrowing bill, and an additional $1.1 billion comes from the budget surplus for public works projects. Grand total $2.6 billion, the largest infrastructure package in state history. In exchange, Republicans get an additional $300 million for nursing homes. Lawmakers moved ahead with that deal, although House GOP Minority Leader Lisa Damith was not satisfied.
$300 million for nursing homes, $500 million to redo the state office building. That is out of balance when I think of the most needy and the most vulnerable in our state.
Also a must-do as the clock ticked toward midnight on Monday, the transportation budget.
We've kicked that can down the proverbial pothole road for decades. I'm really proud the legislature's decided to come up with a means to fix this.
Governor Tim Walz, first part of the agreement, Minnesota's gasoline tax will be indexed to inflation and increase 5 cents per gallon over the next 4 years.
If we'd focused on our priorities, we could fix these roads. But instead, we're wasting it on all of these trains and crap that don't work. They're way too expensive, and we do not need.
Republican Representative Kurt Dowd pointing out Democrats are spending $195 million to reestablish passenger rail service between the Twin Cities and Duluth while increasing taxes when the state has a massive budget surplus.
There is no surplus in transportation in Minnesota. Sources and resources that we rely on to support transportation are outside of the general fund.
Democratic Senator Scott Dibble from Minneapolis. And the other high-profile part of the transportation budget deal, beginning July 1st, 2024, a 50-cent fee on deliveries over $100 in Minnesota, except for food, including restaurants, or for baby products and drugs and medical devices. House Republican Leader Damith says not only will that delivery fee be highest in the nation.
Democrats in the state of Minnesota are going to double down and make it the most complicated in the nation to keep track of.
But Democrats' transportation lead in the House, Frank Hornstein from Minneapolis, says the bill.
This is a historic generational investment in transportation, which will move our state forward in so many ways. for decades and decades to come.
And another flashpoint as the clock stood a scant 6 hours from the midnight adjournment deadline. As lawmakers debated a major health and human services budget bill, Republicans objected that some undocumented immigrants will be eligible for health insurance under state-run Minnesota Care.
Minnesota is open. Come on in. The taxpayers of Minnesota will fund you to be on health care, get driver's license.
Alexandria Republican Mary Franzen.
We have been paying taxes since we got here, and we have not the benefits. And they take the money for the benefits, but we don't have them. So it's time for us to get the benefits if we are already paying for them.
Immigrant advocates outside the House chamber, supported by St. Paul Democrat Maria Isa Perez Vega.
$12.4 billion of Minnesota's spending dollars, according to the Minnesota Chamber, is made by, given, spent by our undocumented community here. The ones that are cleaning up the hospitals are folks that have came from other countries that love this state.
And vigorous Republican objections to repealing numerous abortion restrictions, including parental notification for minors and the Born Alive law. Instead of mandating that medical personnel take reasonable measures to preserve the life and health of an infant born alive, it will require care for the infant, a change that Browns Valley Republican and EMS responder Jeff Backer strongly opposes.
When I'm called on the scene, I have to provide every life-saving measures possible, not care. Life-saving.
Rochester Democrat Tina Liebling responds a family should be allowed to decide with their doctor what kind of intervention is appropriate or none.
Sometimes what the family wants to do is hold the child and spend the last few minutes with the child and not have it whisked away to have tubes and IVs and other kinds of things that are futile, and they should be allowed to make that decision.
I understand we're all accountable for the people in our districts, but I would just warn you that you're also accountable to the one who forms them in the womb.
Merrifield Republican and Pastor Ben Davis.
It is not legal, and it will not be legal after this bill becomes law, to leave an infant that is born alive without appropriate care. You don't need that born alive law to protect infants against infanticide. Infanticide is, in fact, illegal.
The House stands adjourned until 12 noon, Monday, February 12, 2024.
The 2023 legislative session became history 2 hours before the midnight deadline. And less than 2 days later, Governor Tim Walz signed the bulk of the remaining budget bills into law on the steps of the state capitol, while thousands of people and one drone looked on.
Remember those at the beginning of the session who told us they'll never hold a majority of one together? They will never do the things to protect reproductive rights, to protect our trans children, to protect our environment, to make sure we have a more inclusive economy. They told us that wouldn't happen. Don't tell them that couldn't happen, because they just showed you it can.
Democrats say it is the largest tax cut in Minnesota history. Republicans respond along with it comes the largest tax increase in other areas and the biggest state budget in Minnesota history.
$72 billion. We should not have increased it to that level.
House Republican Leader Damuth says the way Walz checks started out,
Minnesotans are going to get $2,000 back. And then it kind of backed off to $1,000. And then it went down and, you know, $200. And not even to every Minnesotan.
But House Speaker Melissa Hortman says Democrats made the right choices for Minnesota.
Cheaper child care and affordable housing, roads getting repaired, free college for those who have income under $80,000. And importantly, we protected reproductive freedom. And we finally passed gun violence prevention measures in Minnesota.
Oinky, oinky, piggy, piggy. Boy, do some politicians like to spend other people's money.
To those folks who have lost hope, who feel alone, whose hearts are breaking, look to the north.
There could hardly be a sharper contrast between what Democrats did this 2023 legislative session and what Republicans say should have been done. And Tasha, voters will have a chance to enforce their verdict on that next year.
Thanks, Bill. More Minnesota Matters after this.
Did you know that more lives are lost to lung cancer each year than breast, colorectal, and prostate cancers combined? Lung cancer will claim more than 135,000 lives this year. But new treatments have improved survival for many with the disease and offer new hope for many more. So does lung cancer screening with low-dose chest CT. The American Cancer Society and most major professional organizations recommend that adults ages 55 and older with a long history of smoking, even if they have quit, should talk with their doctor to learn more about lung cancer screening. Lung cancer screening saves lives by detecting lung cancer early when it's more successfully treated. So, ask your doctor if lung cancer screening is right for you. And if you smoke, ask your doctor to help you quit. Visit the National Lung Cancer Roundtable website at nlcrt.org. That's nlcrt.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. Whether or not you agree with what happened or didn't happen, it's pretty hard not to label the 2023 legislative session as out of the ordinary or maybe even extraordinary. MNN's Bill Werner talked with Hamline University political and legal expert David Schultz about that.
Three adjectives have been used to describe this legislative session. One of the words is historic. The other, I think one of the media outlets used this initially, was the word consequential. And the third word is one that is used by the political campaigns, most commonly the Democrats, and that is transformative. So historic, consequential, and transformative. Let's take a look at those one at a time in the context of this legislative session. Historic, that's kind of data, what happened, right? So what did happen, and is this legislative session unusual in an historic way?
It's unusual in many ways. So first we should say it's broken a pattern that we've seen for the last 20 years. In fact, that the session is done on time and there'll be no special session. And in the last 20 years, the new normal has been legislative overtime, near government shutdown. So on that score, it's historic. Historic also in terms of the fact that we are looking at an incredible large surplus, the largest in Minnesota history by percentage and by dollar amount. We're also looking at, as a result of that, the largest spending of a surplus in any legislative session in history and the largest increase in the state's budget history, well over 30%. It's also historic in the sense that this was an agenda moved largely as a result of single-party rule and a consequence of winner-take-all politics in Minnesota.
And right there, David, you used the noun, and I'd like to take us then to adjective number two in our discussion, that being consequential. Whether you agree with the outcome or not, and there are folks who disagree very vigorously with the consequentiality of this legislative session, they will say they are consequences in a negative fashion, right? Okay, but regardless of that, it seems to me, and you're a longtime observer of this, that this is, if not unprecedented, it's certainly a tremendous number of highly controversial issues that Democrats dealt with in this legislative session.
You're absolutely correct, and we can walk through a whole bunch of social issues.
Yes.
It is abortion. It is gender-affirming care for transgender individuals. It is about legalization of recreational marijuana. It is pretty significant environmental bills.
And driver's license bill, college tuition for all, the gun bills, and I think, you know...
I was going to throw in free meals, you know, for K through 12.
Without a doubt.
12 students.
That one is, yep. That one probably got more bipartisan support than any of the others, but some of these bills, such as the driver's license for all bill, and even more recently, the expansion of Minnesota Care so that undocumented immigrants can potentially be eligible for that, right? If they're in certain income, at certain income levels. Those are highly controversial, particularly among Republicans. The argument there being that these are not even citizens, and they are people who are here illegally, those particular issues are probably the most controversial of all, I would think.
They are, but I'm also even going to say consequential in yet another way, which is regarding a whole host of election law changes.
Okay,
election laws that will allow ex-felons to be able to vote upon their release from prison. Automatic registration for people to be able to register to vote, early registration for those before they're age 18 to be able to register to vote, and a sleeper that most people weren't paying attention to, which is changing the legal requirements for a party to become a major party. Currently, right now, if you can get 5% of the vote, you qualify as a major party. It's shifted now to 10%. And this is important because in a state that likes to pride itself on third-party candidates, for example, a quarter of a century ago, Jesse Ventura was elected as a third-party candidate. But this change, I'm going to argue, helps potentially, all these election law changes potentially helps Democrats. And this is the part where we want to say consequence or consequential is that the Democrats not only moved a policy agenda that was favorable to the people who supported them, but they also changed the election laws in a way that potentially and consequentially could make it easier for Democrats to continue to win elections in Minnesota. That, I think, is an incredibly important issue that has been, I think, largely missed by many people.
I really appreciate you bringing that up, David, because that really, you are correct, that has not been discussed very widely, if at all, as a matter of fact. And I think it leads into our final adjective in this discussion that we're having, that being transformative. So is what the Democrats did transformative? Will it last long term?
Democrats want to say this is the second Minnesota miracle, referring back to the 1970s legislating and that occurred back then. The question becomes, will the reforms in terms of the environment, in terms of, let us say, education policy, will they have the longer-term effects that Democrats seem to be promising? And that is yet to be seen. Additionally, are these reforms, especially the ones with price tags associated with them, are they sustainable in the long term? That is a really, really big question because we had the largest surplus in history. We spent it all. And we also, at the same time, the state of Minnesota, or the Democrats in control, raise taxes. All of this becomes perhaps problematic if we go into a recession. But even broader, we don't know right now if the policy and the spending is actually going to achieve the results that the Democrats are claiming.
David, I'd like to leave it with one thing, and that is, if we look at all of these plethora of issues that they dealt with, including some of the decisions that they made on the budget that Democrats are claiming are transformative, and others say, well, maybe transforming us the wrong way, or they may not last based on the economy, as you were saying, or various other, or the political winds changing, right? So clearly abortion would be in that category, right? If Republicans are controlling things, that's going to go absolutely the other way. Some of the paid family medical leave, some of the gun provisions, those could all potentially be reversed, just like the United States Supreme Court recently reversed a 1973 decision, right? So my question is, of all of these plethora of issues, the real controversial ones, which one do you think might stick long term? And the one that came to mind to me first of all the things is marijuana, cannabis. You agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think once you have proverbially, you know, let the genie out of the bottle, it's not going back in at this point. I think we're really looking at a demographic shift in Minnesota and nationwide regarding the legalization of marijuana. That I think, is here no matter what. If I were going to pick one
okay,
that I think stays.
Yes,
that,
tell us yours. Good.
Yes. I actually think it is the free meals for kids in school.
Fair enough.
Granted that it wasn't a straight party line vote, but in a state that cares or says it cares a lot about kids, I think that's one that's going to enjoy widespread support over time. And I think that fits to the core of Minnesota's personality of caring about kids.
And that is Hamline University Professor David Schultz. Tasha?
More Minnesota Matters coming up. Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. Minnesota lawmakers are making a historic $2 billion investment to expand housing opportunities and address homelessness in the state. MNN's Brent Palm gets reaction and more details about this funding from the head of the Minnesota Housing Partnership.
Ann Mavity, Executive Director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership. In your news release, it says it will truly transform lives and communities. I understand you folks are celebrating a legislative win, a nice chunk of funding. Tell us a little bit about it and what it means to you folks.
Well, we have heard from folks around Minnesota at what a stress point they are in terms of being able to afford housing. All this research that shows from in every single corner of Minnesota, people are paying too much for housing or simply don't have enough to even grow our businesses from War Road to the Twin Cities. And so this legislative session, what we've just concluded is investments in housing that people will feel across the state and hopefully be very transformative in their communities and in individual lives.
$2 billion sounds like a nice shot in the arm. Tell us a little bit about what some of this is going to be invested in, a few of the programs.
So housing is complex. There's all kinds of housing stresses and also housing opportunities. This funding will ensure that folks who are struggling to get into home ownership have an on-ramp into generational wealth and growing their own equity and investments in their families and communities by getting into home ownership in lots of different ways, from home ownership counseling to down payment assistance and other ways. It also simply builds the supply of housing and funds the creation and construction of affordable housing across the state. That includes workforce housing, growing affordable housing broadly in the community, multifamily, as well as single family homes. In addition, there's money in there to help people pay the rent. One of the key wins, because a lot of this money is one-time funding, we are sitting on a state surplus as well as federal emergency relief funding that the state still had available to be spent. And housing is a great investment. You can build that one time and have that housing around for 100 years. So it's a great one-time investment also. But what's exciting about this session is we also have some investments that will endure. So a metro sales tax was passed, which people might not love paying. It's 0.25 cents of a sales tax. So it's not a huge amount for that individual, but what it does is allow thousands, up to 5,000 families to be able to afford their homes and pay their rents, even when they're struggling with one or two jobs trying to just make ends meet.
And if somebody wants to learn more, or if they think this applies to them, who should they contact? Do they contact the Minnesota Housing Partnership? What direction do you want to point them in?
Right. Well, we will have information on our website, which is mhponline.org, about these resources. However, we do not ourselves deploy those resources. We don't administer that funding. That will come out of the state agency, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, which will actually be deploying these funds. Typically, the state fiscal year begins on July 1st. So we would hope to see some of that money flowing sometime after that, right, as it gets approved and ready to go. It's a lot of money for one agency to get out the door. So we're going to be working to make sure that it gets into people's hands and helps people maintain their housing and find new housing as soon as possible.
Thanks, Brent. Time for a quick break. Stay tuned.
It's Thursday night and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. MNN Sports Director Mike Grimm spoke with University of Minnesota Director of Sports Psychology, Dr. Carly Anderson, about how she and her staff are trying to make sure Golden Gopher athletes know it's okay to seek help if they need it, and there are a lot of resources being poured into that assistance.
Mental health and well-being is something that doesn't just come once a year. It is constant that we're maintaining that, getting good sleep, being communicative with our loved ones, et cetera. So for athletes, it's just the same. Those that are mentally healthier will perform better and be healthier as students and, you know, sons and daughters and boyfriends, girlfriends, and all these roles that they fill on campus. And so it is important. And I'm very grateful here at the U, we have, you know, a comprehensive kind of medical team where we work with our physicians, our athletic trainers, our sport dietitians, and our sports psychologists as a medical team to comprehensively intervene, treat, help support the whole athlete. You know, I would invite people to consider if you wanted to get stronger in your upper body strength or in your endurance or improve your nutrition or your sleep. If you were to tell a friend or a family member, hey, like, I'm starting to go to the gym 3 times a week. I really want to work on my endurance or my upper body strength. They wouldn't shame you for that.
No, you'd be, oh, great. Good for you. Pat on the back.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It would be really reinforced and applaud you for that. Kudos. Gosh, you want to grow and get better and learn and enhance your health. That's where we need to view mental health and proactive well-being in our brain, in our mind, mm-hmm. is that those that are being proactive and caring about it, kudos to you. Awesome. Reinforced for that rather than stigmatized and actually, in fact, seeing it and viewing it as a strength. And the athletes that come and do sports psych at the U of M, we have over 60% of all of our 600 Gopher athletes use sports psychology services as individuals. So it's a heavily utilized resource here. Every single team has athletes that utilize sports psych. Some teams, we have almost the whole team utilizes it. Largely, a lot of them view it as, well, of course I'd use that resource. Just like I use sport dietitian, I use our strength and conditioning coaches 5 days a week because I want to maintain my health. I don't want to just, or my fitness. I don't want to just do it once a week. Yeah. That's not going to keep my upper body strong. They view sports psych the same way, and I just kudos to them for that. Those that use it, I often think some of our bravest, most growth-minded athletes.
Yeah.
I commend them.
So it's almost like weightlifting for the mind, right?
Absolutely. I mean, why wouldn't you use the resource if it's there? Why wouldn't you use every resource in your power to be the best? Because these athletes are already physically well trained. Right. They're already talented. They're gifted. Most of the things at this level are mental. The difference between being able to perform under pressure or being able to handle some adversity that's happened. And so really helping them with those skills at this stage in their life is really the difference. And so those that do it, I'm like, you go. If you're not, you're probably leaving a stone unturned in some ways. And I would just add that at the Olympic level movement, you also see most NGBs have sports psychologists on staff. So all the Olympic athletes, I think the research shows about 95% of athletes are using sports psych, as well as you're now seeing it in the pros. In the NFL, in the NBA, the players' associations are really encouraging sports psychology and mental health care.
That's the Director of Sports Psychology Services for the Golden Gophers, Dr. Carly Anderson, with MNN Sports Director Mike Grimm. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Minnesota Matters. Be sure to join us again next week on this MNN affiliate station, same time, same place. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Until next time, I'm Tasha Radel.